Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In his new book, The Rainboroughs, One Family's Quest to Build a New England, writer and historian Adrian Tinniswood makes the arresting claim that in the 17th century, the people who had first crossed the Atlantic to these shores to build a biblical city upon a hill in New England sailed back to fulfill that vision in Old England, and that experience with this one family then rebounded all the way through history a century later to the American Revolution. It's an interesting story about an interesting family, and Adrian Tinniswood joins us now from the BBC studios in Bath, England. Once again, he's author of the new book, The Rainboroughs, One Family's Quest to Build a New England. Adrian Tinniswood, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. So, first of all, explain to us kind of broadly who were the Rainboroughs and who was some of the interesting members of this family.
They're more of a tribe, more of a clan, I think, than just a family. They were merchant mariners who lived in and around East London in the 1630s, and they were used to travel. They went into the Mediterranean, they traveled down to Morocco, and they also saw the opportunities there were in New England as Massachusetts was establishing itself. So they were Puritans, they were high-minded, principled Protestants, but they were also profiteers. They saw no inconsistency in making a good living as well as sort of pursuing a more religious life.
So explain to us or describe to us more about that religious life and what about it in particular brought so many members of the Rainsborough family to New England in the 1600s.
It was freedom. It was freedom, Magna. I mean, the religious climate in England in the 1630s was very repressive, and the particular brand of Puritanism that the Rainboroughs belonged to was the same as John Winthrop and the people who established Massachusetts and established sort of Plymouth colony. They were looking for the chance to decide how to worship for themselves without being told what to do by bishops, without being told what to do by priests, without having a prayer book put in front of them and told, this is the prayer you will say, these are the words you will use, this is the belief you will have. They were looking for individual religious liberty, very definitely.
And one of them was actually married to John Winthrop?
Indeed. One of the Rainboroughs, Martha, she married John Winthrop, and in fact her sister, and you kind of need to look at the family tree here, because her sister married John Winthrop's son, Stephen. So that what does that make? An in-law, aunt, I don't know. There were more liberal times, Puritans or not, much more liberal times then.
So describe to us, before we get to the central part of this book and that the English Civil War part, just describe to us briefly, as you do so wonderfully in the book, about the nature of life for the Rainboroughs in New England in the mid-17th century. It wasn't the easiest of livings.
It was dreadful. It was really awful. I mean, there's a wonderful story about Dorothy Bradford, one of the original pilgrims, who boarded the Mayflower at Southampton in England in 1620. She went with her husband across the Atlantic when the Mayflower finally arrived off Cape Cod. She took one look at this brave new world and threw herself off the deck. And, that story, I mean, it's apocryphal. We don't know if it's true or not. But it hides a deeper truth that Massachusetts was a wilderness. It was a scary, scary place. People got depressive anxieties. They got disorientation. They got this agonizing sense of loss. They were away from home. You know, it wasn't a new home for them. It was exile in lots of ways.
How dare you make the scales fall from my eyes, Adrian Tinniswood, about our wonderful Massachusetts Bay here. But let's move our attention here. I mean, back to England, because it's easy to think that when the Puritans left England in the 17th century, that they saw it as a one-way ticket. But that is absolutely not necessarily the case, because so many did return. And what was the political climate in England that led to the English Civil War?
I mean, I think we have to distinguish here that from among those who returned just because they didn't like it. I mean, something like a quarter of early colonists to Massachusetts went home again. They just didn't like that. They couldn't settle. But you've got another band, another group. They're the ones that I'm particularly interested in. Who they'd gone out to build that city on a hill in New England, but as the English Civil War gained momentum, as our King Charles I really fell out big time with Parliament, and Parliament started to say, well, who runs the country? Is it the elected representatives of the country? And elected needs to be taken in a fairly broad sense, of course, in that time. Or is it the king? And as Parliament said, it's us, it's the people that need to rule. So those New England colonists who'd gone out looking to build a city on a hill in Massachusetts thought, hey, why don't we build it back in London or Oxford or Reading, you know, somewhere which isn't a sort of a swamp-filled forest or whatever, you know, right. Somewhere that's civilization.
They actually went back to fight in the English Civil War.
They went back to fight. There are whole regiments of Oliver Cromwell's army, the New Model Army, the Roundheads who fought for Parliament, whole regiments whose officers were basically Massachusetts militiamen.
Huh.
There are dozens and dozens of hardened veterans. A number of them had seen action in the dreadful Indian Wars, the Pequot Wars of the 1630s, which were atrocities were committed all over the place. But a lot of them had seen military service in that sense, and they decided to go home. I mean, and they were going home. That's the thing, Megan. They weren't. Going, you know, they were going back to England, to their families, to what was familiar to them.
Right. There was no America to speak of at that time. That was more than a century in the making. Now, in terms of the political and philosophical impact that the Rainborough family in particular had, one of them who never left England, Thomas Rainborough, in fact, gives one of the more famous speeches in English political history about one man, one vote.
It's a landmark speech. Thomas Rainborough, who's his brother and two of his sisters, in fact, two brothers and two sisters, went out to the colonies. Thomas was a sea captain. He stayed in England, and he sailed up and down the Mediterranean. But he's hugely influenced by those members of his clan who went to New England and then went back to England, Old England. And he, when the English Civil War is all but over, he stands up in a great army council, a great army debate in front of Cromwell, and he says this astonishing thing. He says, I think the poorest he that is in England hath a life to live as the greatest he. Mm. In other words, not everybody, not women, but men should have the vote. All men should have the vote. And you know, mate, nobody had said that. Nobody in the history of the world has suggested that all men should have a right to say who governed them. Yeah. It was an astonishing assertion.
Now, Adrian Tenniswood, I wonder if you might be able to briefly describe what you think the impact was of the return of the American Rainboroughs. I mean, like you said, they never thought that they were American at that time in the 1650s, but what was it about their particular experience in New England that helped them really shape the thinking in the aftermath of the English Civil War?
I think that there's two things here. One is that they saw what individual freedom and liberty could achieve. They saw that there was a better, you know, an opportunity for a better way of life. And the freedoms that they got initially in New England were, they taught them that they could do this back home in England. But there's another side to it as well, Meg, which is that as Puritanism took hold in New England, so Massachusetts society became more and more repressive. And the irony is that having gone out to look for religious freedom by the 1640s and early 1650s, religious freedom was a joke, that there was none in New England. Quakers were being hanged, Baptists were being sort of flogged, people were being exiled for having views for any kind of religious dissent.
Mm.
So you've got the kind of wheel going, the wheel turning full circle, and people were going back to Old England thinking, well, if the dream's gone sour here in Massachusetts, let's see if we can revive it back in Old England.
Well, in the last minute that we have, obviously the monarchy was eventually restored in England, but how do you think the experience of the Rainboroughs going back and forth between New England and the English Civil War plays into the American Revolution, which takes, you know, it happens more than a century later, and, you know, most of the founding fathers weren't even born until, what, the early 1700s. But is there evidence of sort of a continuity of thinking there?
There's a continuity of thinking, certainly. I mean, the idea of individual freedom, the idea of religious individual liberty and religious toleration, which will receive its kind of full flowering in the later 18th century, that's born in the Atlantic. That's born in New England, Old England in the 1630s and 40s.
Well, Adrian Tinniswood is author of the remarkable new book, The Rainboroughs, One Family's Quest to Build a New England. What an amazing family. We just scratched the surface here. And thank you so very much for sharing this story with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll speak with the only Republican in the gubernatorial race so far, Charlie Baker, as he makes his second bid for the corner office. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.